This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings right here, brought to you by our good friends at Next Level Training Center. And you can go to nextleveltc.com. They have a great Facebook page, folks. Trent Brett and Gaynell Brett, all the great folks there. Want to give them a shout out. Pirates had a huge week, 5-0. And by the way, folks, happy Easter. Hopefully the Easter Bunny was good to you, and he is risen. So it's a great day this afternoon for us right now. With us, we have the man that doesn't have a face or a camera on, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you?
What's going on, Dave? I do indeed have a face. You can see the face on the screen. I just do not have a live camera. And, okay. 5-0 week for the Pirates. We talked about last week needing to bounce back, and I told Corey, I said, if we could go 4-1 this week, that would kind of right the ship. And they did us one better, 5-0. You can't do any better than that.
No question. Bubba Rosenbaum, the vacationing Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you?
No vacation this weekend, but hope everyone's doing well, having a nice, relaxing weekend.
All right. I think he is on vacation. I think he's lying.
But Bubba's Wi-Fi is on vacation.
I think he's in jail.
We need to maybe Corey Glore can the play-by-play voice of the ECU Baseball Pirates. Corey, can you bail him out?
No. I'm a broadcaster. I don't have the ability to bail him out. You kidding me? No, he is stuck in that tank for the rest of and so one of you gentlemen can call up Trent Britt and have him bail him out.
No, Bubba, I thought David said a good point that you were. You indicated that you were going on vacation again, that you were headed to the beach. Is that not until tomorrow?
That was false news, or fake news. Fake news.
Fake but, news. Fake news. No
yeah,
beach.
Yeah, that was fake news. I honestly That's... did. I thought I was going to be down at Oak Island because that typically is where I spend Easter weekend. But this year there was a change of plans, and we're here in lovely China Grove.
The Rosenbaums, after going to Disney, could not make their annual trip to Oak Island, so they had to spend it there in China Grove.
Yeah. Hey, now, Dave, you can hear me okay now, right? Now that I connected to the Wi-Fi?
Yeah. We got you perfectly right now.
Great.
All right, yeah, we're good. So Pirates are, Corey, are 5-0 on the week, and certainly, I guess, number 11, I would imagine, just out of curiosity, I know it really doesn't matter. How much do you think we're going to move up this week, if any?
Oh, they'll move up. I don't know how much. They'll probably slide up to, they'll stay in the, 6 to 10 range, I think. But, no, that will, I mean, they didn't drop much after last week. So, I mean, they're going to move up a few spots this week. But, they certainly proved themselves over five games in a very short amount of time over the last couple of times out.
And it kind of also matters what happened in front of us. I don't know what happened with the teams that are ranked ahead of us, because you can't move up if everybody else won too.
I'm not sure, but I was just going to expound on what Kyle was saying there, just as far as the teams that are ranked around you, both above and below, and there are a lot of variables that play into it.
You can only do what you can control, and the rankings are, they're great for us, but they're so low on the priority list where, you can do what you can control when it comes to RPI stuff, but you still need help around you. That's the same case with the rankings. Louisville was losing to Wake Forest today. I don't know if they officially lost or not, but you know, you'll need some things to shift above you, both for the top 25 and for the RPI stuff, in order to keep moving up that list.
Corey, it's way, 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 way too early, but with the strengths of the league being what it is this year, do you foresee, you know, just forecasting, do you foresee that being held against us? I mean, as the RPI will probably continue to drop slightly as we're in league play. I mean, how much do you think that'll be held against us? What I mean is come tournament time seeding.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It was in 2019, and the league is frankly better in 19 than it is right now. And so it will be a part of the discussion for this team moving forward. If they can do, you know, they're not going to go 4-0 every weekend in conference play. That is way too much to ask. But if they keep taking care of business in conference play, they will be doing their part, but they will still have the discussion surrounding them about the league as a whole. Now, after last night, again, the NCAA is dragging their feet on their official RPI, but Warren Nolan's RPI is usually pretty bang on with what they do. The American jumped up a slot as a conference late last night, just crept over at Conference USA. But Conference USA will have non-conference games the rest of the way, and so they'll have their opportunities to bolster that. American won't. And so, yeah, that's going to be part of this discussion as long as the Pirates keep winning games and being in that spot of hosting a regional top eight national seed. If they're going to be in that mix come May, then the conference will be the storyline adjacent to that, whether or not, you know, the selection committee believes that ECU is worthy of a top eight or a regional host in spite of the league that they play in.
And I do also think, maybe, I hope anyway, I think sometimes you get credit for previous years, and we've hosted regionals the last two times out, and I hope that is taken into consideration also if things go our way and they don't just look at RPI, the fact that we have hosted regionals and been to super regionals, you know, and maybe it's just our turn to be a top eight national seed if things go our way. A lot of baseball to be played.
Yeah, I'll say this. You know, I haven't had as much exposure to the selection committee for college baseball, and we don't get as much of a behind-the-curtain view of that as we do for the other leagues or the other sports. But you are right that there is a little bit of past results that do come into play a touch with this, at least from how I viewed it from where I sit. That probably shouldn't be the case. In fact, it definitely shouldn't be the case. It's kind of like when a legendary actor wins an Oscar after being nominated six times prior to that, like it's becomes a career thing, that sort of thing. There is some element there, and the Pirates hosting two regionals in a row in their last two opportunities, and hosting them well, even the, you know, winning one, losing one, however you want to frame that, but just the way the regionals operated, yeah, that will be on the minds, even if, frankly, it probably shouldn't be. It should only be solely on what happens this season. But it will be hard for selection committee to look past how things have gone previous years, and how, you know, Oxford will get another regional and College Station will get another regional. Like they just, you know, it's hard to eliminate the past when thinking about stuff like this.
And you think over East Carolina's baseball history, very quickly, Dave, not to get off on a tangent, but I mean, even back well before Cliff Godwin was the head coach, back to the Randy Mazie era in 2003, the Pirates got in when they were on the bubble, and I want to say it was maybe 2012, the same thing happened, and there are teams like East Carolina, when you're there year in, year out, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt sometimes. Whereas in the case of basketball, if East Carolina was on the bubble, you probably wouldn't feel very good.
Yeah, then you look at the other side of the coin, Bubba. In 04, under Randy Mazie, we definitely should have been a national seed. And instead, we're playing the Supers in South Carolina.
I mean, it goes back to kind of how we started. Like, these discussions will keep happening as long as East Carolina keeps doing what they can do here. And doing what they did last week is certainly something. As we move through conference play, if they keep doing what they are capable of doing and taking care of business and winning their home conference games and then winning series on the road, then all this that we're talking about becomes more of a tangible discussion. Right now, it is hypothetical, yep. But it can change over the next few weeks, certainly with how this team has operated in nearly the first half of the year. It's certainly something that we are hopeful we can talk about in a month from now, but we're still a ways out from actually really putting together the connecting the dots here as to what this might lead to.
Yep.
And no doubt we'll be talking about the games this week. There's five games in just a second. We'll be picking a PGX pitcher of the game, PGX gloves pitcher of the game, and a PGX gloves player of the game. We'll have that in just a minute. Corey, along those lines, I had a question to the fellows in a group text while we were watching and listening to you. That was fantastic having that. The very fact of with the conference, speaking of the conference, and maybe it's not as good as it should be or whatever, how much as far as like games wise, I know you can't put a number on it, but nobody expects them to go 32-0. That's unreasonable expectations. It's crazy. But how many wins do you think they would need? Do you have any idea in order to have like a national seed or to, in other words, where if you're on the bubble, like a 7 or 8 seed, that way they wouldn't be able to say, they can say, look, the conference was down and they dominated the conference. They're in
32-0 will do it.
I mean, 32-0 wouldn't be a bad start.
I know that. I understand that, but I know that they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I think to kind of go off a little bit of what Kyle was talking about earlier and how past results do have a small impact here and what the selection committee does formulate, even though it shouldn't, and even though they say it does have some element here. In 2019, this team went 20-4. They set a record for conference wins in this league. And were the 10 seed.
Yeah.
Now, if they go better than 1-2 in the conference tournament that year, does that change? I think it probably had to have been a championship with what that result turned out to be.
Right.
So when you look at this year, and now there's a little bit more of an uphill battle with what the league has shown us thus far. I don't know if the number of losses, I think that we're talking about number of wins. I think it's almost number of losses in conference moving forward. And you're going to have 28 games. I don't know if there's a number that frankly would qualify yet. I think it will have to be a regular season title by a pretty sizable margin, you know, a couple game margin, and a conference tournament title. That would have to be the 1-2 mix here, in my view, if the selection committee is going to be looking at this league as it probably should be looked at right now, which is undervalued right now. It's not performing the way it should be. Then East Carolina is going to have to kind of trudge through that. And that means winning the regular season by a few games and then winning Clearwater. And I think that's what the Pirates are facing here.
Corey, one more question about the league, then we'll get into the five games. Do you think it would be more beneficial if, let's say, 3 or 4 teams were really competitive in league and, you know, we all of a sudden had 3 or 4 teams winning a record, or if somebody like Wichita got hot and it was East Carolina and Wichita dominating the league, and then, you know, Wichita ended up with a great record in league, you know, 32 yeah. games, let's say they're 28 and 6, and 4 of their losses come from East Carolina. 28-6 doesn't work, but you know what I mean.
I see what, like, you know, 30. I see what you mean. Yeah, 26-6, that sort of thing. That's a fascinating question. Something that I kind of thought about over this first weekend here is just kind of seeing the results elsewhere around the conference, and it will not take long for things to really break apart in this format now this year. If the Pirates can win 3 against Memphis, then suddenly there's already a gulf that they create between at least Memphis and shoves one team out of the way 2 weeks into the year. Like, it will not take as much time this year to create a separation. What that does for the league, it's a great question. I mean, in years past, this conference has been kind of dictated with 3 or 4 teams jostling at the top of the league until the final weekend of the year. Would that benefit this year? I don't know if it's possible this year right now. So if Wichita says, say they win their series against Houston coming up this weekend, like they just did this past weekend, and they are suddenly in that, you know, 1-2 position with ECU after 2 weeks. It might not be the worst thing in the world to have that for the league, because right now, frankly, it's a one big lead. That's where this thing is right now. The American might be one bid. So having two teams kind of push their way forward and create a nice 1-2, kind of like what basketball wound up having this year, a 1-2 at the top and then roll the dice in the conference tournament after that, I think this year that might actually be beneficial for this conference.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, because to me, the RPI is so far down, there's no more non-conference games to bring it up. If there was another team out there like a Wichita that looked like, all right, they're really good, they're dominating the league along with East Carolina, they're tournament bound, it would be better than a bunch of teams cannibalizing each other.
Yeah, totally agree with you, because they don't know. In 2018, when this conference kind of cannibalized itself, that was the number four conference RPI-wise that year. American, I think, was 5 in 2019. And we saw when one team pulled away in the conference in 2019, well, it still didn't wind up as good as it probably should have in terms of how things were slotted. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just ECU not hosting, not being a top eight seed, but UConn was also in the hosting mix for a regional, and then they were pushed aside because of the view of the league. And now this year, the view of the league is a little warranted. So having a team, if Wichita can, say, go two series wins in a row here to open up the year and starts trending upward, that might be okay for what the conference is facing right now.
And they had a good record non-conference, if I remember correctly. They just played a weak non-conference schedule. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't play, you know, massive, you know, heavy hitters this year, but they're, I think now they're, you know, they went 3-1 over the weekend. So that puts them at 12-8 for non-con this year. So, I mean, it's good. It's winning. It's not, you know, blowing people out of the water sort of thing, but it's certainly not as bad as we've seen from the rest of the league.
All right, you guys want to talk about the five games of this past week?
Yeah, that North Carolina game Tuesday night, which now seems like it was 2 weeks ago, was about as exciting of a baseball game as you could possibly have. I mean, the way I always define it when I'm watching a baseball game and I get that fired up and it's that close, I call it football exciting. It to me, being a college football junkie, that's what it felt like. The eighth and ninth inning of that game was just – I got just as fired up as I do for Pirate football. It was so much fun to watch us come back, hit two two-run homers down four to tie it up, and then to walk it off in the ninth. I mean, against Carolina, you can't ask for a better scenario than that. And then all the people that left early, and it was a work night and it was getting late, but, man, they had to regret it.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the traffic in Greenville was so bad. It was like the Dodgers game, Corey, where they come in the third, leave in the seventh because of Dodgers games, the traffic's so bad. I was like, what are you doing on a Tuesday night in Greenville, North Carolina? There's no traffic to worry about. And another thing is, just like it happened, like we were talking in our group text, good riddance to you. Sorry, Pirate fans, but if you were there, there's a lot of us that want to be there, and we can't be there right now, even with our Pirate Club ranks are higher. And they grow up like mine. I mean, I'm like 600 away from even getting in there. So there's some. It's like 1400 right now and above to get in.
Yeah, I forget which home run the eighth inning it was, but I remember pretty distinctly saying there are a lot of taillights turned around now.
Yeah. It was the second one, I believe.
I
remember that.
Hey, Max, I love the line, Corey.
Yeah, it's a. I certainly caught notice of that from my position. It was right about this. I think it was the seventh inning stretch. That's when Carolina grabbed their 10th run in the top half of that inning. They hit some bombs on Tuesday, and I forget who hit that one. I got it in front of me, but it feels like it's forever ago. It was Causey who hit that one in the seventh, and then you could see kind of the old adage was someone pulled the fire alarm, and that it just started filtering out. And I just kind of sat back and I said, you know, okay. And, you know, and I didn't know if the Pirates were going to come back by that point. It certainly didn't feel like it at the time, but Yeah, I had a slightly similar thought to what you just mentioned there, Dave. A lot of people are trying to get into these games right now, and they're able to. So enjoy it, even though that could have easily been a loss. It was a beautiful night. Watch a little bit of baseball and then be on your way. And it was a long game, too. But it was one of the most bonkers games I think you'll ever see. And so, yeah, that, I guess that's it. It was great. We'll get to the weekend, I know, here coming up. But it was great to actually the crowd that was there for the weekend set. One, they pretty much stuck it out all the way through, including yesterday in the doubleheader. But they were also into it from the jump, and that was great to see because I knew they'd be into it Tuesday. I wanted to make sure it carried over this weekend. Now my directive to folks who are able to come into Clark LeClaire starting Friday, stick around because they're, even if the Pirates get drubbed, like, sit back and just enjoy a night out at the ballpark because no one at this point after the last year should take something like that for granted.
No doubt.
Bubba, you know, in a group text, I think that when that bomb was hit for Carolina, I believe that you said, and hopefully you won't mind me saying it on live show here.
Home run derby.
Yeah, home derby. I was like, oh, my God. But you know something, Corey, that felt like that was like I'm a boxing fan. I think Kyle is too. That felt like a heavyweight fight, like a regional game. And even though I know this sounds crazy and I'm a huge Pirate fan, obviously, but I really felt like we were still in the game, even though I knew there was a chance we could lose the game. With this team, it's still because we'd already come back once, four runs down. It didn't feel like we were – now, if we were down much more than that, it would be very difficult. But I would not have had the confidence I had. But I felt confident we still had a chance to come back where most of the time I would have been like, oh, man, this does look good. I don't know. This team looks like they got more fight in them.
I think what Tuesday night showed me and then the opener Thursday showed me as well. I mean, this team has not had any issues, you know, coming back from deficits this year. They've had a few early deficits right away. The Illinois State Series comes to mind, which they were down in the first inning for all three games. But there haven't been a ton of late game comebacks for them this year. And that wasn't really a quality of the 2019 team either, coming back late in contests. And so to see that play out in back-to-back games after how the Elon series ended, that 2-1 game on Saturday. And, you know, I could certainly feel fans on a little bit of apprehensive edge of their seat as how things are progressing Tuesday night. For them to kind of swiftly answer that question on Tuesday about coming back late in games and then do it again the following game, that was one of the things I think that this team had yet to be able to show. And they haven't had many opportunities to show it. They're winning so many games. But to come back against a high-quality team in North Carolina and then on your first conference game of the year when your starter had been pretty hard, I think Tuesday and Thursday are going to be some pretty standout games as this season hits the back end.
Yeah, and coming back late like that, and then, you know, like you said, we turned around, ended again Thursday. I mean, a lot of baseball is so mental, and then once you do something, you've done it, and you know you can do it, and so you can go do it again. And now you have that always. You can reach back in your pocket, and you're down late in the game, and you can go, hey, remember Carolina. And, you know, so it was not only was it a great comeback, it was the right team to do it against because – the fans wanted it, and these players want it. I mean, it does mean more to the fans, but these players still want to beat Carolina. They get it. Cliff teaches it to them what the rivalry means. So it was to do it against anybody, but to do it against those guys was really special.
I think what I kind of took out of that, you know, the many things that I walked out of that stadium with following that game was, you know, I don't put as much on that on the rivalry aspect as a lot of other folks do, but the fact that that was their last shot to kind of prove their mettle in non-conference play after some rather dispiriting midweek contests prior, including one Carolina the week before, I mean they could have easily packed that one in, easily called that a night, and we saw that a week prior in Chapel Hill. We saw it the game prior at Elon. Like, we had seen that the week before, and the four of us were talking about it about how they kind of reset after what was a down week for them. And it was a down week more mentally than physically. And then they were able to do that. They got stronger mentally, because physically we know what they are. Mentally, they showed what they can be on Tuesday night. It didn't matter to me who they were playing. The fact that they were able to pull that one out when, you know, you're down four in the eighth, like, that's about over. And they actually pulled that one out in some pretty thrilling fashion. That's pretty special.
Yeah, when they cut it to two, when he hit the home run and cut it to two and made it 8-10, I had a really good feeling at that point we were going to figure out how to win the ball game. Yeah. And we did. And then bases loaded there in the bottom of the ninth. And God knows, I can never remember anybody who came up to bat. Who was it that had the winning
hit? Nikoravich.
Hey, Mac.
Yeah, Mac.
It was his night. I mean, he was right. The star of the show.
Yeah. Nikoravich hits that ball to left field. And I thought the guy was going to catch it. I thought it was going to be a play at the plate. And it went over his head. And I was preparing myself mentally to be stressed for a play at the plate. And then it went over his head. And I was like, ball game, baby.
Yeah. Off the bat, I thought that was going to be a fly out. Like, I initially off the bat. And then there was so much acceleration on that thing. Like, he hit that ball, he nearly hit it out. I mean, there was so much off the bat, and that was a pitch well up, well out of the zone too. That kind of got lost in everything. That pitch was nowhere near the zone, and he was able to line it not just the opposite way but over the outfielder's head to the wall to win it. I mean, we saw a coming out party for Alek Makarevich this week, and he had the highlight right off the bat on Tuesday. But that was some impressive piece of hitting that he wound up having to win it.
I got a question about Makarevich after that hit. Did he take his jersey off, or did they strip it off of him?
No, it was removed from him in the pile in center field. I don't think he had that in his mind that he was going to be doing that. And I don't know who
that's
did
the
it.
Biggest
I don't
thing
think you can
now.
See.
Anytime he gets a big hit after a win, he should take his jersey off and just flex.
And only Jose Altuve does not do that. But I don't know who stripped it off of him because he was buried in the pile. But I remember. After Jack Hoochmaner just hurled the Gatorade cooler, he wound up with his jersey and hurled it into the outfield. Like, so he was just throwing everything. I don't think he was the one who stripped him clean there, but he eventually got it back. I do know that, but that night was going to stick around for a while. That was something else.
And we talk about playing from the 10-6 deficit. I mean, you had 4-0 and 6-2 as well. So three four-run deficits over the course of that ball game. And one of the things that really stood out in my mind, there early on, you know, Tristan Kimmel got the start, and then we used another arm. I can't recall who, but we were already on our third pitcher. And then C.J. Mayhew, he went about 50 to 55 pitches and really provided some stability there.
In a game like that, you're looking for one guy to bridge the gap because it seems like nobody else can do it. And Mayhew has been that time after time after time. And he goes 3 scoreless. He was pitcher 4 of that game and struck out 6. And then it looked as though Carolina found that as well. They threw Sean Rapp out there, the lefty. He was their third pitcher. After Caden O'Brien got hit hard in the fourth. I mean, you're looking for one guy to just calm things down, and CJ is that for this bullpen. Whether you throw him in first out or last out, he's just that guy. Nothing really gets to him. The environment around him, the game situation, when you put him in, he's not fazed by it. And so he's become, you know, we saw this in 2020, but CJ has become, you know, in a bullpen with a lot of go-tos, he's the top of the list for Cliff Godwin as to who do I need to get me the important outs here. And for Tuesday night, that was getting the outs in the middle of that game, because otherwise that thing was going to go off the rails.
And Corey, you bring up a great point about the middle innings. I thought about when listening to you and Coach O in that game, that very fact of we've talked about that very point of Carolina game, and I think the Wilmington game, different games we've talked about when things have gone awry for the Pirates. It seems like it's going awry during the middle innings, where I don't know if they take the foot off the gas, they're not focused, what happens, but those middle innings are so crucial. So it's great that we have, you know, the pitching to come in to, like you said, calm things down.
You don't want to have it snowball. And that's, you know, that's what they were able to avoid Tuesday night, was a real avalanche of things going wrong out of the pitching. That, you know, the week before against Carolina, it was snowballing. UNCW was snowballing. Like, that happened quite a bit. But it didn't on Tuesday. And so that's why we're talking about a win there and not another midweek loss to close out the non-conference season. It's because CJ was able to come to the bullpen and stop the avalanche from falling any further. And he allowed his team to come back and tie it. He went as far as he could, and then the Pirates had to catch up again. They had to find a way through again. The two oldest veterans got hit for home runs. Cole Moore and Bridges got hit, and so suddenly it was down to four again. And then you go to Groves, the true freshman, and he calms things down. And suddenly the game is tied back up, and then you go to Tyler Smith to get you through the ninth, and he's been in every situation you could think of in a baseball game, and he's the winner because of it. So, I mean, you're not going to have midweeks anymore to, you know, bite your nails when it comes to how outs are reported here. The Pirates found enough outs to get back into that game Tuesday night.
Very exciting.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was doing it. Go ahead. I was getting ready to do the same thing. Go ahead, Bubba.
Shifting over to talk about the weekend, you had Carson Wisenhunt getting the start on Thursday. So just talk about, he's been so great this year. Not as good this week, but then you had Garrett Saylor come in, and he was lights out and really gave us a chance to pull out that win when, like Coach Godwin said afterwards, we really weren't executing the way we needed to. And in fact, Coach Godwin said we got lucky in his estimation.
Yeah, because when Cincinnati's lineup is performing the way that they can perform, it looks like the first four or five innings of that Thursday game, where they're doing what East Carolina can do. We said it a few times over the course of the weekend. These two offenses were built very similarly, and they operate in similar ways. And so when Cincinnati is pulling off hit and runs, drag bunts, moving runners over, using their speed at the top of the order, then they're a very challenging lineup to hold down. And Carson got flustered by that. It's kind of a rare time in which he was really kind of fighting against it, against a team that was putting a lot of pressure on behind him. So that's a learning experience now for Wisenhunt, where that team, especially the top six of that order, they can beat in a lot of different ways. And they were beating Carson in small ball, fundamental ways. They pulled off one of the best hit and runs you'll ever see to score a run. And I think that was the fifth inning to take the lead. Yeah. They can nickel and dime you to death. That's by paper cut sort of offense if they're really going. And they were getting going against Carson. So kind of like what we were just talking about. If your starter is not what you thought he could be for this game, then who's going to come in and pick up the slack? And it was Garrett Saylor who, you know, we were talking about this a little bit of broadcast over the weekend. If you're game planning for a certain type of starting pitcher, and in this case, a power left-hander in Carson Wisenhunt, and you get to it, then all of a sudden you get a power right-hander with a slider that is one of the hardest pitches to figure out in this Pirate pitching staff, then you can get really caught off guard by it. And Cincinnati never figured out Saylor and that breaking ball. And so you found the reliever to pick up the slack for your starter, and that allowed this team the opportunity to come back late and win that game. And that was the theme of the whole weekend, putting together the combination on the mound to get you four wins. We knew it heading into this year. The pitching was going to be the strength of the team. This weekend, all four games, it was the strength of the team.
in at different points. I know you've said this as well as Steve and I go of Hoist the Colors, and he's certainly accurate. When Garrett Saylor's on and he has it going, his stuff is electric.
It's deadly when he's on. I mean, we saw it last year, and that when he is really going well, you can see his confidence building hitter after hitter after hitter, to the point where it almost looks like cockiness at times. But the way he was pitching on Thursday, you could just see he 12 up, 12 down. And every hitter he saw, he was just, you know, the chest was puffed out a little bit more. He's walking a little bit. He was strutting a little bit more each time after an inning closed. When you have a slider that's as devastating as his is, and he knows it's good, and he knows he's working it good, then nobody's going to hit him. And that's what happened on Thursday night.
Yeah, Saylor really changed the entire aspect of that baseball game when he came in.
I think he changed the series, in my mind. I think that completely flipped the tenor of the series. Yep. There were two pitching moments that flipped the tenor of the series. We'll talk about the other one here coming up a little bit later. But him shutting things down when Cincinnati was kind of doing pretty much what they wanted to offensively on Thursday, and him just slamming that door shut, the entire complexion of that weekend changed when he was on the mound.
Yeah, because if they win that one, they win the opening game, then, you know, we're in a pressure situation to make sure we get the next one. And at that point, you're just hoping you split, best case, 3-1. He comes in, shuts it down. We find a way to win it, and suddenly, you know, we're in control and end up, you know, winning all four.
I know. It's going to be every week now in this conference how teams are able to find 27 outs on the mound for four games each weekend. Whoever finds it and scripts it out the best and is able to stick to that script is going to win each series. Like that you're going to have eight books essentially written. Like there will be a book with eight separate chapters here this year in conference play, more so than in previous years. This is a really, you know, Cliff Godwin kind of made fun of, you know, folks in the media about trying to hype up four game series a little bit more here. And he's like, yeah, we're playing get baseball. Like, it's not that big of a deal, but there are so many unique dynamics to this structure now this year that every weekend is going to tell a different story, more so than in years past in the American. So that's why I think Jason Dietrich was so thrilled, frankly, about the change about this season. I mean, he was asked before the year how he thinks his team will handle this, and he said, I can't wait for four games in 3 days, because we saw how this team is built pitching wise and what they can do in four games in 3 days. This is why Jason Dietrich was so thrilled about this heading into the year.
Corey, before we continue talking about the Cincinnati series, comment from Alan Powell. Pirate Al read my mind. He says, Corey, what is your early impression of Cam Klotch? He looks to me like he's going to be a fantastic player. Very smooth at first and athletic enough to play a corner outfield spot.
Yeah, I like a lot of what I've seen from him in a very limited amount of time. And we haven't seen him on the mound yet. That's another element of his game that I think this program is pretty excited about. He is a two-way guy. And he picked ECU because of that, because of how they've molded two-way guys in the past. But I think he's got a really smooth swing, like a really great left-handed swing. And he hit the ball hard a couple of times over the weekend. And now, you know, things are about to get a little bit more crowded on this roster when Hoover returns to the lineup, which is, you know, a week or so away here. And so if Klontz is going to keep performing the way that he has been, he's going to be kind of the guy that will get, you know what, let's give him a late game at bat, and then we'll put him at first defensively, that sort of thing. Like, he's showing that already here today, or so far in his early going of his freshman year. I like a lot about what I've seen from him. I've liked a good amount about what I've seen from Starling here. He's getting a lot of time here over the last couple of games as well. These true freshmen are biding their time, and they're soaking this in right now. Now they're getting some opportunities to show up in crucial games. I mean, the end of the Carolina game featured a lot of these guys, and the comeback was in place while they were involved in it. So things like this that don't register initially on the forefront, they will matter as this season goes along and as these guys' careers go along, because Klontz is being thrown into a lot right now, he's getting to soak all this in while performing all the process.
No question, Corey. And the very fact that it's building depth and something that it's not like East Carolina has been, the cupboard's been bare in the past and your time here and even beyond your time here, but it just seems like every single position we're so deep, including we talk about pitching all the time, but even a guy like Riley Johnson. I mean, there's so many great guys we can start rattling off.
Yeah, and over the weekend, it became official how big the draft is coming up this year. And yes, there will be a lot of this Pirates team on that draft board in some capacity, a lot of them, with how they perform this year. So there will be positions coming up here, if not immediately this year in 2022 for some of these guys. And so getting them involved now in crucial games in, you know, moments that are stressful, that's only going to benefit them when they eventually take over some bigger roles on this club.
Moving on to the game on Friday, just talk about Gavin Williams. He was excellent in that start at Elon, you know, 6 innings, 11 Ks, and he topped that this week, 13 strikeouts and 3 walks in 6 2/3.
Yeah, I didn't know if he could top the Elon game, but he did against a trickier lineup in Cincinnati. They never were able to take away his fastball. And if you're going to get to Gavin, they're going to try and go after his fastball and at least put it in play and try and do some damage off of it. When Cincinnati puts balls in play, they have speed to do some work with that, but they couldn't get to it at all. And that's now 2 weeks in a row in which Gavin's able to command his fastball. And then when he gets that going, then the slider and then the occasional changeup come in as well. And he becomes one of the best pitchers in the nation. If he's got that portfolio going, all three together, it's imperative that teams get to him early, because then he's going to try and stick with a fastball. He won't be able to try and diversify as much, but Cincinnati wasn't able to. And so that allowed him to essentially toy with his team by and large all game long. And so he was throwing whatever he wanted, and Cincinnati was not able to catch up to a fastball above the zone, change up or slider down beneath the zone. They were going after everything. And that is the sign of a pitcher who, you know, he's been around a long time, but that was his 8th start. That's it. And the maturity level of which he maneuvered his way through that lineup was special.
Corey, I thought the very fact that what Coach was talking about with Gavin, the very fact that, you know, bad things happen to good people. And I don't know if you remember that in the post game. And just the very fact, I mean, here's a guy who has tremendous talent. I remember when he came in as a freshman and they were talking about what a great arm he had coming in. And then the fact that he's had some injuries that really, it's not that he's played bad. It's just in other words, where he's not playing because of his performance. It's that there's in other words, these little injuries that are happening to him, like with a finger and all that, that prohibits him to be at the A game.
He's been thrown a world of adversity since he's come on the campus injury-wise. And even before he arrived on campus, his senior year got derailed in high school due to an injury. Probably cost him draft slots there. He was still drafted, but he, like he has done over the last couple of years, went out of high school and said, I've got more to prove. I wasn't able to do it now. Let me go prove it here in college. And then more injuries happen. Arm soreness in his freshman year, and then the broken finger heading into last year, and the injury heading into this year. And, you know, he was fielding calls, even a 5-round draft last year, and he made it clear, no, I've got more to show you. Like, I need to show you what I'm really capable of doing. I'm worth more than you're telling me that I'm worth. And now we're seeing it. And now we're seeing, listen, he's not going to stop now. That's never going to happen. But he's shown himself in 2 outings what he's worth to professional baseball. And certainly in conjunction with that, what he is to this East Carolina program and how important he is to this East Carolina starting rotation. But to put it bluntly, in the last 2 weeks, he's made himself a good amount of money.
Corey, moving on to the doubleheader on Saturday, and just talk about, you know, in previous years, especially, I guess, 2019, the Pirates played a boatload of doubleheaders and fared very well. So I thought, especially with our pitching depth and us being in such a good spot going into the doubleheader, I liked our chances of potentially sweeping it, even though it's so tough to win four games against a pretty good baseball team in Cincinnati. But, you know, we fall behind 3-0 early in game one. And then I think it was still 3-0 going into the fourth inning. And then all of a sudden we put up a four spot in the seven run fifth.
Well, they grabbed two in the second and made it a one run game.
Yes,
but
yes.
This was, we talk about Saylor coming in on Thursday. This was the other pitching change that shifted the whole series. When Evan Shaver left after two innings, he is their ace. And Coach O and I noticed it in the second inning, but then only after he was lifted did it really come to front of mind. Shaver's velocity dipped quite a bit in that second frame. He was sitting 91, he's on 86 at second. The Pirates were getting to him then, and suddenly he was out of the game. We haven't heard what happened. After the game, or after the doubleheader, we heard that he was battling a little bit of a shoulder thing earlier on in the year, and so maybe this is what crept in here, but him leaving completely changed everything that day. Like, the Pirates were getting to him, but it was a diminished Shaver in that second inning. If he sticks around, he's full strength. I don't know if the Pirates win that game because he's that good. But once Cincinnati had to go into their bullpen early to start off that doubleheader, it felt over. Like, the whole thing felt done. It was just a matter of time, as we said, adjusting to, you know, you had a scouting report on one guy, and suddenly you had to throw it out the window because he was gone early. And now they took it in to figure out Max Bergman, the first guy out of the pen, and then they unleashed on him. And then it was just that avalanche for Cincinnati's bullpen. Scott Guggins couldn't find the guy to stop the tide there against this Pirates team. And that carried over a little bit into game two as well that day. If Shaver is still in that game, I think we're talking, at least from where I sat, we're probably talking about a split of that doubleheader. But he left, and the Pirates pounced and took advantage of that.
Got to give my buddy Bubba Rosenbaum credit. You called it, Bubba. I remember in a group text, I've said that a lot today, the group text, but you called it about going into the bullpen. You called it as soon as they made that. I think it was that time when they made that pitching change about going into the bullpen early or something along those lines. And when all of a sudden we started scoring, I was just grinning because I knew that I was like, my man got it right.
Doubleheaders are a race. That game one, it's a race to who can get to the bullpen first. Like, that's what the first game of a doubleheader is. And especially end a series like this one turned out to do, because now it became a question of, you know, both teams actually had pretty stocked bullpens heading into Saturday. You know, Cincinnati's four guys in the first two games out of the pen. Pirates used three guys, and they were sensational in those first two games. And so it became, you know, who can stick their nose in front of getting into that bullpen. But this goes back to why Jason Dietrich was so ready for this time of year, because he knows his bullpen is better than everyone's in this conference right now. And Cincinnati's is the worst in the conference right now. We saw that play out. What the Pirates can get to a team's weakness, they're going to key in on it. Now, they got gifted that early opportunity on Saturday in game one, but they were able to get into it and they were able to take advantage of it. And that's why they run ruled that game. And then they were able to finish out the sweep after that.
Hey, and I know Cincinnati's obviously trying to prevent the sweep there in the second game of the doubleheader, but to their credit, I was very surprised that we only scored two runs. And even if we won that ball game, I thought that they would put up some runs at some point.
Yeah, I walked out of that thinking that, you know, Cincinnati has a good amount of pieces here to do something. They will have issues in the bullpen, and they will see weaker teams in the Pirates moving forward until they see the Pirates again in May. But if Shaver's healthy, their front three starting pitchers are really good. Shanley was good to finish out that doubleheader. And the Pirates got to Dean McCarthy in two innings. But outside of that on Friday, he was terrific. And then they might have found their fourth guy in Zach Siegel, who opened up the series on Thursday. I think they have the starting pitching to kind of compete with most everyone else in this conference right now. Their bullpen is going to lose them games moving forward. But that lineup, you know, it's very good. And we can't lose sight of, you know, the Pirate pitching did such a good job this weekend just on the surface. But they did it to a really good lineup this weekend as well. And so they have enough to do some damage in the league. So the fact that they weren't able to pick up Garrett Shanley until the fifth inning on Saturday, that didn't surprise me as much. There were a couple, frankly, lapsing moments for East Carolina in the first half of that game. A double play wasn't turned when it should have to end the inning. A weird fielding error by Moylan at first. They needed kind of something to snap them back into that game, and they finally were able to wear things down in that fifth inning. But one game never carries over the next, even a doubleheader day. So the fact that those two games are really different, that's not a surprise to me at all.
I want to remind fans that Extra Innings brought to you by Next Level Training Center. You can go to nextleveltc.com. Give them a call if your kid needs some instruction. 252-756-NEXT. They have a great Facebook page. Appreciate Trent, Britt, and everyone there for their support of the program. You know, Corey, we're going to have our preview on Wednesday night for Memphis, but I just want to get your early take on the Memphis team. I believe, are they the worst team in the league? I know they're one of the worst.
I don't think they're the worst team in the league. They have one of the best players in the league, and Hunter Goodman, and he's having that good of a year. Their catcher, preseason player of the year, and he is performing like that. Their starting rotation is interesting. They have three, at least what they threw against Tulane over the weekend. They have a true freshman, a second-year freshman, a third-year redshirt freshman, who Blake Wimberly is that guy, and he's been their Friday guy, and he's been good. And then they have a seventh-year senior. That's who threw their games against Tulane, and that's a weird backstory for him that if he's going this weekend, we'll get into across the broadcast. Their bullpen is just as strong as Cincinnati's, and that is, I say that purposefully. And their lineup is not as good as Cincinnati's. So there is an opportunity here to pounce on Memphis before they, frankly, get the footing underneath them. Because they have talent in that lineup. It has not been performing well this year. It's only been Goodman. He's the only guy hitting above. You know, he's not only hitting 300, he's hitting 317, I think, right now. And the next closest is 260. Like, I mean, that team has not been hitting the ball. And that is usually a trait of Darren Schoenrock's team. They can hit. They just haven't been able to find the pitching. Well, now they got a Friday night starter in Wimberly that's played very, very well. A lot of youth and an extremely old guy behind him. Got hit hard by Tulane over the weekend and not much behind him in the bullpen. But they grabbed the first game at Tulane, and they should have grabbed one more of that series, but they weren't able to grab the opener of that doubleheader. So don't worry about what the numbers say, because, you know, we're talking about a four-game sweep this weekend. We were three innings away from not talking about that, the whole tenor of this weekend changing. It's this sport. It's baseball, and things will change. And you're not going to go 4-0 every weekend, even against teams that you probably should be beating, like Memphis coming in this weekend.
And, Corey, and we talk about how great the pitching was for the Pirates all weekend long. And, you know, you had Tyler Smith, who had a couple of rough outings here of late. He had the solid relief outing that we touched on earlier. So it was nice to see Tyler have a good start. And then also we talked about Garrett Saylor's relief performance. How about the relief performance of Cam Colmore?
Yeah, and that's bouncing back after a rough Tuesday against Carolina. And so he came on, and he slammed the door. And Tyler had one of his outings. Like, ball was in play off of him. And, you know, sometimes it was hard contact, but the Pirates played great defense when that happened. Sometimes weak contact. The Pirates had a couple moments of poor defense when that happened. But it was a Tyler Smith outing, and when – the team has the pitching staff that was ready to go for that final game. He just pulled in the fifth. He probably could have gone further than the fifth, frankly. But Cliff Godwin, one, had trust his relievers to do what they did, and Colemore and Mayhew to finish out that game. And we've seen over the years with Tyler Smith, when things kind of go haywire in an inning, they tend to go haywire quick on him. And so I think Cliff was being precautious there on pulling Tyler there in the fifth inning. And then Cam comes in, gets out of a jam, and then it's smooth sailing after that, and he gets the win. So, I mean, all four of these games had slightly different looks to them. The one common theme amongst all of them was that when the Pirates needed to get something done on the mound, whether it was a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher, they got it done. And that's going to be what carries this team throughout the rest of the season. And hopefully the discussion we started off our show with here today, that is what carries them into that conversation about hosting and being a top eight and all that stuff, conference champions, all that stuff. It's going to be that part of the game that really, really performed at an A level this weekend that'll carry them through.
And Bubba, before, I know you have the AAC results. I want to get to that. I just want to make mention the 2 points that you made that were phenomenal. The number of scoreless innings, was it 15 innings? I forget how many innings it was.
15 by the bullpen throughout the four games, yeah.
And then how many innings? Was it like four innings out of all those innings they score out of all of four games? It's just amazing. I want to make that point, Bubba, before we move on, because I was just like, wow, that was incredible.
Yeah, it was four innings out of the 34 that Cincinnati wound up hitting, because the third game was a seven-inning game, as it turned out. And three of those four innings happened the first five innings of the series. They grabbed in the second, the fourth, and the fifth on Thursday. They scored four runs. And then after that, just one inning is when they put up runs. That was the second on Saturday in game one. And they had chances. They had plenty of chances. They left 32 on across the series. Like, that's a boatload. So it's not as though the Pirates were just carving them up left and right. When they needed to get something done, they got it done. And Cincinnati, with a very good lineup, was not able to come through in a big spot when they needed to.
And you talk about getting things done when we needed to. Corey, you referenced the fifth inning. That was electrifying when Kim Colemore struck out the side. Leaving the bases loaded?
Two on, nobody out, a scoreless game.
Yeah.
And his breaking ball, curveball, change, like he had a weird pitch going that game that was something else. It was sitting 74, 75 when he would drop the arm. He gets so much movement off of it. And then he'd back it up with a 90-mile-per-hour four-seamer, like from the top slot. Like, when he's doing that, he is one of the weirdest pitchers a hitter is going to see. He's one of the more unhittable pitchers because he can do so much with his arsenal just by dropping the arm just a little bit like that. Things can change in a hurry, and he was just as sharp as a tack on Saturday.
And something else I wanted – you talked about Tyler Smith and the way the Bearcats put the ball in play off him, and Tyler Smith is known to be, you know, a pitch-to-contact guy, but you referenced the three web jams that the Pirates had there in that fourth game of the series, and those were tremendous. You had Riley Johnson in center field laying out going toward the right center field gap, and then you had also a play by Zach Agnos, and then you had the third out of the inning, Ryder Giles left his feet and showed the hops, getting up to snag the line drive.
I think at moments like that can kind of keep the energy tank filled more after, you know, I think that there were times early in that second game, which the Pirates felt pretty content about, yeah, we're going to go out there and we're going to win this game after what happened in game one. And then moments like that can snap them back in, like just like, all right, let's go. Like, let's keep going here, because you had a great throw across the diamond. You had a great grab in center. Then you had a great snare at short. That just kind of got the dugout's juices flowing there. And then they were starting to, you know, right after that, they got a little bit more off of Shanley. And so it seemed like they were a little bit more locked in from that point forward. But there weren't many moments here this weekend that, I don't want to speak for the fan base here, but I know there were a lot of folks concerned a week ago after where the Pirates sat. Not sure there's much to criticize after the last five games or two?
No, not at all. And you know, Dave referenced earlier our PGX player and pitcher of the week. We'll start off with the player of the week. We talked about AMAC, what a night he had against the Tar Heels. He had the game-tying hit with the two-run homer to right center that was an absolute bomb in the eighth, and then he had the walk-off single to left field in the ninth. And AMAC is our PGX player of the week, 9 of 21, two home runs, a double, seven runs driven in, and those two critical hits against the Tar Heels that I just referenced. So congratulations to Alec Makarevich on being our player of the week. And then the PGX pitcher of the week, a multi-time winner here as well, Garrett Saylor, with his four terrific innings out of the bullpen, shutout innings. And then he had those eight strikeouts and absolutely electric stuff against the Bearcats in game one.
Yeah, and I know AMAC is getting this in large part because of the heroics on Tuesday, but do not overlook the fact that he had the game-winning homer on Thursday as well. And he finishes, if I got my math correct here, he goes 9 for 21 across the five games with a couple of homers, scores five, drives in seven, I think, with the four he had on Tuesday night. I mean, he – and then defensively, they put him everywhere, and he was doing the job. And so – and especially on Thursday and Friday when it was a challenging right field play. With the wind coming in like it was. So, yeah, yeah. He was special across the board this week. And then Garrett Saylor coming in, doing what he did on Thursday, the whole feel of that series changed when he came out.
And that game winner that you referenced in the first game against Cincinnati, that came from the right side of the plate.
Yep. So that's home run against Carolina. Yeah. Home run against Carolina is from the left side.
He's doing it all. And as Coach Godwin has been – when you hear the high praises of Coach preseason, obviously early on in the season, and then you see now why that he said he was going to have a hard time keeping him out of the lineup for sure. I mean, now it's really starting to come into play, no pun intended there. But certainly I know, Corey, with everything going on this week, we talked about Memphis. Do you have any final thoughts before? And by the way, we have I was wondering about any kind of music or movie quotes, being Memphis coming to town. Can you do any kind of Sun Records kind of thing? That was my idea.
If I had a heads up, I have a Sun Records t-shirt I'm not wearing right now. I'm repping the Milwaukee Bucks right now.
But, oh, wow.
So for our show next week, I will wear my Sun Records t-shirt to recap the Memphis series. Okay. But yes, I mean, I've been to Memphis a few times, obviously. It is a lovely town, and I'm a big fan of the music that comes out of that city. And so if you want to send me Elvis lines and all that stuff, or anything from the folks that have come through Sun Records over the years, fire away.
I have one for you that just to give it, so I could do it all day long with Sun Records, but I can see it like a massive home run, and you say something like, "Goodness gracious, great balls of fire," or something like that. That's off the top of my head. You know, like it has to be the right moment. It can't be just any old home run. I know it would have to be like a game, a walk-off, or like a momentum kind of, or a massive bomb, like 400 or 500 feet, right? I mean, right. Something, yeah. Like that.
I mean, I totally am on board with that. I'm absolutely 1,000% on board with that.
All right. And do you have anything before Bubba, before we let him go? I know we're a little bit over an hour now on Easter. Happy Easter, everyone, watching and listening, and for sure.
No, I don't have anything right now, Dave. I'm sure I'll send you some stuff, Corey, as the week goes on.
Yeah, the thing about this new look schedule, we got some time now. This is almost now this is up Kyle's alley. This is a football weekend schedule for college baseball. So you can recuperate after four grueling games here over the weekend, plus Carolina, right, prior to that. Can reset, you can recharge, and then gear up for Memphis coming in this weekend. I mean, it's the best of both worlds. If you're a college football fan dabbling in college baseball, you're getting this experience this year.
And that was a good question you had yesterday. You can check it out on our YouTube channel that you had, Dave, asking Coach Godwin after the game with all these four-game series now? I know he loves getting that question, but, you know, the gap that you have, having those days without midweek games where you typically just have one or maybe 2 weeks like that during the course of a normal college baseball season, how the Pirates will be handling that. And so I was interested to hear his response to that.
I mean, this team came out of this week banged up a little bit. Bryson Wuerl had a back injury, cost him 2 games in this weekend set. Connor Norby left late in game 4 for the quad injury that injury stems from when he collided with Lane Hoover in week 2. That's where he hit Hoover in the head, was with his quad, and it's been nagging him ever since. And so, you know, he leaves in the, you know, in a 2-0 game in the midway mark of that game. So it was clearly bugging him after a long day of baseball, because he hasn't left games early by and large at all this year, even after the injury happened. And so, yeah, this team could use some time to get off feet a little bit and then prep for Memphis coming in this weekend. So, it was a really wise call for the conference to say, you know what, hard no on midweeks moving forward this year, and we're going to load up on conference games, because now you throw all the eggs in the one basket, pun slightly intended, for the day, for each weekend, and then take a step back, reset, recharge the batteries, and then go at it again here. So it will be a different way to manage moving forward for this coaching staff, even if it's, you know, played up a little bit, you know, less by Cliff Godwin. So it is a different way to do this year. But I think everyone is okay with not having a trip to UNCW coming up on Wednesday, or Old Dominion, or anything like that, with what this team just went through this past weekend.
Hey, when Corey, you think
of, when you think of Memphis and music, you think, of course, of Elvis. And so we have somebody that you're very familiar with, Corey, Alan Vick, chiming in, saying, after a Pirate blast, how about "That's All Right, Mama"?
There are a few places I could put that, I think. Yeah, like if Alan allows me to be a little bit more versatile with that one, I already got the wheel spinning on that one. Send me a BB King, you know, like he's my guy. He's my guy, BB. I'm bummed that we don't get to go to Memphis this year. The rotation could have been moved up a year, but it wasn't the case. And so, I will bring Memphis to Greenville this weekend.
And hopefully, if you're using a music line from B.B. King, hopefully the thrill is gone for the Memphis Tigers and not the ECU Pirates, right?
Exactly. I mean, listen, you're going to be keeping a shrewd ear out this weekend, I sense here, gentlemen.
No doubt about it. Corey, as always, before we let you go, we want to remind fans that I know they can listen to you, the broadcast. Is it Friday, right? Is the first pitch on Friday?
Friday will be the doubleheader, and that will be a 1:00 start. I believe that is streamed on the school's website, both games on Friday, and then it'll be on Plus Saturday and Sunday. I'm not sure if it will be our broadcast on Plus or if a different TV crew is in for those games. I usually don't find out much about that until, frankly, I walk into the press box each weekend. So, but you can listen and watch us on Friday, assuredly, and then definitely listen to us on Saturday and Sunday to finish out that series.
No doubt. And we'll remind fans, obviously, through the week, for sure. Corey, if you can give your social media, how can people follow you? And certainly we'll let you get out of here.
Twitter. And Instagram at Corey Glore. Facebook exists in my world, but I don't really touch it that much. And then if you go to the Pirate IMG Twitter account, we get highlights out after every win from ball games this year. So head over there and listen to some baseball sound.
All right. Thank you, Corey, so much, my friend. It was a great week, and looking forward to another great week as Pirates hosting the Memphis Tigers. And we'll be talking to you again on Sunday.
Gentlemen, have a great week. Have a great rest of your Easter, and I will talk to you again next weekend.
All right, man. Have a good one.
See you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, you know, Bubba, it's awesome, the very fact of our friend Alan Vick. I don't know if you know this or not, Bubba, but Alan Vick is probably the biggest Elvis fan that I know, And Alan Vick is also a good friend of mine who is a huge wrestling fan, NASCAR fan. The guy is like a walking encyclopedia to a lot of different things. But anyway, I want to give a shout out to Alan Vick because tomorrow night we've got a big show starting at 7 o'clock. We'll have, I was saying, Bubba, Alan Vick is a huge wrestling fan. And tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, we're going to have a big show. I'm really excited to, we've been talking about it and promoting. We're going to have the Russian Nightmare. Nikita Koloff is going to be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and we'll have that for you. And that'll be the first half hour, so somewhere around there. And around 7:30 from 94.3 The Game, our good friend Trent McGee, he's coming back, expected dad, and we'll have him on. We'll be talking about, I think it's baby number, I think child number three for him. So we're looking forward to that. And his wife was kind enough. Thank you, Mrs. McGee, for allowing Trent to come on tomorrow night. I know that they're getting ready to have their third child soon. So I appreciate him coming on, Bubba, as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Look forward to having Trent back on. He does an excellent job. And, you know, you talk about Nikita Koloff, obviously. I don't follow wrestling the way you and Kyle do, but I still look forward to hearing what he has to say. And I know Pirate Al, I'll be shocked if he's not tuned in. I definitely think he will be tuned in if at all possible. And I know Brennan Shapiro, even though he may not necessarily follow wrestling, he had the opportunity to hear Nikita Koloff speak at his church or some type of function.
No doubt. By the way, for fans, I know there's going to be an impromptu steel cage match between Alan Vick and Pirate Al that'll be coming up. Maybe special guest referee will have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. That, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow night. It's going to be fantastic for sure. One of my fans about Next Level Training Center. They're our sponsor for extra innings, nextleveltc.com. You can go there, and obviously they have, you can call them too, 252-756-NEXT. It means a lot that they trusted us. The very first place they advertise is with us. It means a lot. Trent is an amazing man. His wife, Gaynell, all the folks there, Bubba, I know that are top-notch. I mean, you think about the Pirates that are working out before they're going to the certainly spring training now with the minor leaguers there, and they're working out there. A lot of guys coming from all around the country. We're lucky to have them in Greenville and Wimbledon Drive. You can go to their Facebook page as well, Bubba. They have a lot of great things that are happening.
Yeah, no doubt. And definitely go to nextleveltc.com and check out their excellent facilities if you're not already familiar with them. And you see the number right there, 252-756-NEXT. And Trent and Gaynell are excellent folks, and Greenville's very blessed to have such an excellent facility. And you know, I know the all the high school teams, middle school teams, and youth teams in the area certainly take advantage of it.
No doubt. And before we go, Bubba, I know our show's running a little bit long, but want to give a shout out to Mark Minicazzi. Kaz is a big fan of ours, and we're a fan of his. And this morning for Easter, one of the Easter presents for Mackenzie, she's starting softball, and I promised her the gloves. We sat down. It's easy for Alex. I surprised him. But for her, as I told her, I didn't want her to have like a boy's glove. I wanted her to pick it out because she's more difficult. And she picked out her favorite animal, Bubba. Is she's a huge animal fan, by the way, is a tiger. And she picked the Eye of the Tiger gloves, those youth gloves. They are phenomenal. She also, her favorite color is red. For the personalized, she got the red gloves. Folks, I'm telling you, Bubba, don't you? I mean, it's the gloves are, when I say stand out in a good way, they're amazing. If you get a chance, you have a kid in Little League, Farm League, maybe it's even T-ball, go ahead and get them used to pgxgloves.com. They have the customized, we're talking about the baseball gloves, the batting gloves, personalized, a whole bunch of stuff, youth stuff, football gloves. You know, we talked to Mike Steele the other night, a big golfer. We have a lot of golfers out there, the golf gloves, and a lot of swag, right, Bubba?
Yeah, love Kaz, and Kaz is, if you're not aware, he's become the manager for the West Virginia Power. The West Virginia Power had been an affiliated minor league ball club, but now they're an independent league, and Kaz, congratulations to him. He's in the middle of, he's still going to keep his home out in Arizona, but he will have a home in West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia, to be exact. And if you followed East Carolina baseball down through the years, when the Pirates have played Marshall, it's about an hour drive from Huntington, and the Pirates have played the Thundering Herd at the West Virginia Powers ballpark there in Charleston a lot. I think pretty much every time they have played the Thundering Herd, it's been there at the West Virginia Power ballpark. And Kaz, from everything he's telling me and everything I've read, he's assembling quite a roster with already at least 9 or 10 former Major League ballplayers.
That sounds really cool. Thank you, Kaz, for your support of the program. And we'll keep an eye on them. And maybe we can have him on and talk about pgxgloves.com, but his managing stuff too, Bubba. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, I look forward to having Kaz on the show soon when he can fit it into his busy schedule. Very quickly, Dave, before we get out of here,
okay.
Not necessarily scores, but just results from around the American. You know, here this weekend, on opening weekend of league play, I want to update folks on the standings. They've been scrolling across the bottom of the screen throughout the broadcast for those who are viewing. But obviously the Pirates, 22-5 now, 4-0 in the American. Wichita State, the Shockers went down to Houston this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. They took 3 out of 4 from the Cougars. And those two programs will be meeting here once again next weekend. So 8 straight games between Houston and Wichita State, whereas the Pirates will play Cincinnati later on in May. Tulane, the Green Wave, they've been struggling a bit, but they took 3 out of 4 from Memphis. Corey referenced that earlier on, how Memphis had the opportunity to split that series, but unable to get it done in a close ball game. And then you had the War on I-4 taking place over in Tampa, and USF and UCF split that 4-game series. USF is now 12-14 overall, of course, 2-2 in the league, and UCF is 12-16 overall as their roller coaster season for a very talented Knights ball club continues. And as you take a look at those records, Wichita State, 6 games over .500, but everybody else is just over or just under .500 on something that's going to need to change to help get the Pirates RPI up there. But with it being nothing but league play from here on out, it's going to be a tough go of it for the Pirates to get to 5th in the RPI like they did in 2019. I think now we're something like 9th, and it's going to have to be a gaudy, very flashy conference record for East Carolina to earn a top 8 national seed this year, where they would assure themselves of hosting a super regional should they win the regional. I think it's going to be, you know, at least a situation where the Pirates have to win 75% of their conference games, maybe, you know, 26-6 or something, about 80%. So we'll see how things play out. But the Pirates are off to an excellent start at 22-5.
No doubt, Bubba, and it's definitely a marathon and not a sprint when it comes to baseball season. So we'll see how that goes. Good luck to the Pirates this week as they take on Memphis. And, of course, we'll have those great shows for you this week on Monday and Wednesday nights. And we appreciate all that you do for us, Bubba. Thank you, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. And also Corey Glore, the voice of the baseball ECU Pirates. Appreciate him very much. Until next time, you've been watching Extra Innings brought to you by Next Level, a training center in Greenville. Until next time, go Pirates. See you later. Good night, everybody.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media, at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!